Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to the Submarine Way Radio. I'm Deb Fortin with John Vincent. We are talking to Carrie Mason. Carrie and I met over a dozen years ago now. The one thing that always struck me about Carrie is that he builds community wherever he goes. Carrie, could you tell us a little bit about your background and what you're doing now? By the way, you have a fan club. There's a number of people who've reached out and are excited about this. Want to hear what you're doing now.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh,
this
my
morning,
gosh.
Very appreciate it.
Well, you're very welcome. I've actually managed to have a bowl of oatmeal and two sips of coffee, so I'm raring to go here. After working some 35 years plus with ADP, and actually, Deb, it was more than 12 years, since you're much younger than I am. I actually left ADP and spent a year working exclusively with nonprofits. I actually had a nonprofit for nonprofits, as it was. And shortly after that, I launched a business coaching service in which I work with small businesses to help them improve their business. Hopefully adding more jobs, more stability, benefits, and allowing business owners and CEOs to really achieve their personal and corporate visions. In the process, I also include my personal passion, which is diversity and inclusion, and hopefully educating those businesses on how having a more diverse workforce really contributes to the overall value of their business, is more attractive to the markets they serve, while also supporting the local community.
Awesome. So how is it going?
I have never worked so hard in my entire life, but very fulfilling work. And you have an opportunity as a small business person, and I am that. I'm a business of one by design, but I work with businesses of varying sizes. And what I really enjoy is I get to leverage my past corporate experience on behalf of small businesses, which are the back fabric of America, if you will. As a small business community goes, so goes the rest of the country, and to an even greater extent, the rest of the world. So I'm quite pleased.
Yeah. Good, good. So the last time we chatted, you talked a little bit about like what it was like to live in Boulder and some of the challenges in Boulder. And since those are so related to our discussions around community, could you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, happy to do so. So, you know, Boulder is a small community, probably has a resident population a little over 125,000, 135,000, but has a transient community that comes into Boulder on a daily basis from outside to provide services. So there is one particular highway, US 36, that every morning you can see what looks like a five-mile wagon train of incoming workers. Yes. Every morning from probably 6:45 to 8 o'clock, and then every afternoon from 3:30, they exit out of the city. I shouldn't say the best. A good portion of those commuters who work in Boulder can't afford to live in Boulder. And you know, Boulder, is notorious for being one of the top 15 most expensive places to live. And it's a great city. It's at the bottom of the Foothill Mountains. It's very desirable for people of all ages who enjoy an outside or healthy lifestyle with hiking and biking and skiing. There's just a plethora of activities. Boulder is very multi-generational. So here in Boulder County, roughly one out of every four adults is over the age of 65. In about 3 to 4 years, that number will go from one out of four to one out of three. And we often think of Boulder County as the canary in the minefield, if you know that phrase, because Boulder County represents what's happening in the state of Colorado, but also throughout the United States. So why is that important? When you have one out of three adults that are over the age of 65, they are leaving the workforce. So it's creating more jobs than we have people to fill those jobs, point one. Point two, as they move into retirement and are no longer working, we now have a growing population of adults who require additional services and support, whether it's in health care or it is in maintenance for their homes, because they're living longer. So they're living to 85, 90. And unfortunately, because the baby boomers is the generation that is retiring, there are not enough Generation X or millennials who are coming of age either to fill the open positions or who have the expertise. And so you have this growing divide, if you will, with the number of people that require services versus the number of people that can provide it. So that means that we have to take advantage of the entire work population, which is where diversity and inclusion comes in. So as employers are learning the hard way, they have to broaden both who they're looking for and be more accepting of the work population that's available, and also create an environment that encourages a diverse population to want to work within your business. So a good portion of those people that come over the hill are diverse, either because of their race, their nationality, their religion, or their economics, meaning that they can't afford to live in Boulder, even though they work in Boulder.
So affordable housing is a critical issue for the community if they're going to attract this influx of people to fill all these jobs that are going to be created, correct?
Absolutely. And in the case of Boulder County, and Boulder County takes great pride in the fact that they preserve huge swatches of land in perpetuity. So one of the more attractive features of Boulder is that you have these huge meadows. You have these huge areas sitting in front of the foothills that are free for hiking and biking. And on any day, you will see any number of groups of people taking advantage of the outdoors. The problem with that is that when you preserve such huge swatches of land for future generations, it reduces the land available for development. And those lands that are developed with housing become more expensive. So here in Boulder, the median cost for a home is north of $500,000. And so if you have a home, that's great because your home is appreciating in value. But if you don't have a home, it's hard to find a home to buy, much less to rent. And then as employers move into Boulder because of its attractive young population, educated population, those folks who move into Boulder tend to have greater earning power, which further puts pressure on the limited resources that are here. So you hear constantly that as a major corporation like a Google was moving into Boulder with 3,000 jobs, all of which, by the way, are welcome because they're 3,000 very high-paying jobs. But the folks moving in have more disposable income, so they're okay for bidding 10, 15% over the market price, which just drives up the price, which exacerbates then the lack of housing. So it's a very interesting circle. And go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, it's interesting. I've driven through Colorado a number of times, and they don't lack for land. It seems to me sort of a strange issue that Boulder couldn't expand beyond where it is today and build into, you know, kind of more of a suburban kind of situation, more housing for people that's affordable. Colorado doesn't lack for land. It's kind of a perplexing thing from an outsider.
It is indeed perplexing, but when you hear of some of the urban sprawl, and if you look only to Texas and the recent troubles there with what they built and how they built, and the fact that the recent hurricanes had such a dramatic impact on those communities, it sort of strengthens the resolve that says you build in the right way, you build in a way that supports the future, and you have measured growth. I won't say restricted growth, because they are building, but the building that's going on is in no way capable of keeping pace with the growing number of people that move to Colorado.
Or
it
the
just,
need
just won't.
In the future. Yeah.
Or the need. And so consequently, it forces folks who work in Boulder to look for housing outside of Boulder, and yet we're seeing similar strains on the local communities. And, you know, just as a matter of reference, there are local communities within probably 20, 25 miles of Boulder that are building 2,000, 3,000, 6,000 units. And yet that's just still not enough to meet the demand that we're having here in Boulder. So,
how interesting. So pretty quickly, and then I want to change the topic to your uncle. What's the quick answer, or is there one?
You know, I struggle with that.
30 seconds, Terry, to solve a big problem.
Yeah, I struggle with that. And I think, you know, to Boulder's credit, Boulder County, they do work with the developers to try to create affordable housing. It's just not enough, given the number of people that are moving into the city. So there is no quick answer. And what we do know is that there's no interest in not preserving land. In fact, every year on the ballot, there are monies being allocated to preserve even more land. You can make of that what you will.
I think it's fascinating, Terry, that our listeners are listening to you talk very specifically about Boulder. You referred to it at least two times, but it's a microcosm of what's going on all over the country. It's almost like on the forefront, and it's, you know, lessons learned or lessons being learned, and how do we proactively look at this? Because we're talking Boulder, Colorado, but I can think of a dozen other cities of all sizes in the exact same situation. And from our previous conversation, and for the benefit of our listeners who may not have heard that, a point you made last time we talked, Kerry, which I thought was huge, affordable housing, massive issue, but an issue most people go, yes, that's an issue. When you talked about you can't attract, I think you used chicken and egg. You can't attract a diverse population when there's nothing to support a diverse population, from things as simple as where do you get your haircut. I never considered that. I never heard that point. But no. It's one thing to go, yes, let's welcome everyone. But if there's no infrastructure to support folks, people look
it's
and go.
It's just another challenge. Yeah,
yeah, I can work anywhere, or I have lots of opportunities. Boulder's beautiful for vacation. So I thought that point was massive, Kerry. Could you just do a little bit of that for our listeners?
Yeah,
it really blew me away.
When I consult with business owners who, they're receptive to a diverse population, but they'll say I can't find them, and the challenge is that. What I refer to as the chicken and the egg, you can't find them because, and why aren't they here? Well, because Boulder lacks an ecosystem to provide the types of services that are required. Case in point, you want to hire a highly educated, highly experienced, talented African-American female. You bring her to your office, you show her the beautiful surroundings, you show her where her corner office with a great view of the foothills sits, and you talk about the wonderful things to do in Boulder, the outdoor lifestyle, how accepting it is, and she's really excited. And then she says, so where's the closest hair salon that supports African-American women hairstyles? And you have to sheepishly say, that would be in Denver, about 37 miles away. Oh, she says. Okay, well, how about a Baptist church? That would also be 35 miles away in Denver. It doesn't take too long for that individual to realize that what they require outside of work is not available in Boulder. And so they make two choices. They do without, or they make the trip to Denver or another surrounding community where they might find that ecosystem that supports their needs. And so that is, you know, somewhat of a burlesquing representation, but that happens more times than you think. And, you know, for businesses, why would you build something if there wasn't a population to take advantage of it? So, you know, and Boulder would tell you, very diverse because of the university that is here. But when you look at the actual services that are available, most of those services are going to be food related. And even that, some would argue that it's more of a mix or a mashing of American and international taste versus a true international taste. So,
Interesting and very complex issues.
Yeah.
So I know, Carrie, you have to run, but we love the story of your uncle in the military. Could you briefly tell our listeners about your uncle?
Yes, I'd love to. So when I was in my early 20s, I got a chance to visit with my uncle, who at the time was a lieutenant commander of the USS Forrestal, which, for those who don't know, was a huge aircraft carrier. And, you know, my uncle was always very proud of the fact that despite having a high school education, he joined the military and spent his probably 37, almost 38 years and going up through the ranks. So, but very proud of his success. And he often talked about what it was like to be away for, you know, 4, 5, 6 months at a time at sea. And when I was visiting with him and had a chance to be on the very top of the ship, I'm not a naval person, so I'm not quite sure of the correct term there, John.
Go with bridge, Carrie. Go with bridge. You're on the bridge. Just go with that. Everyone,
I was on the bridge. Thank you. Thank you very much. I was on the bridge, you know, which if you've never been on the bridge of a naval carrier, then you cannot appreciate what it's like to be on this incredible piece of machinery. And so I'm overlooking the bridge. I see the people. I see the aircraft, et cetera. And my uncle gave me permission to explore the ship. So I got a chance to go from the very top all the way down to the lowest hole, where there was some poor soul that was actually cleaning out this hole. And where I got to was devoid of any light, devoid of any fresh air. And he was clearly, you know, doing work that nobody wanted to do. And so when I had a chance to talk with my uncle about what I had observed, and I got a lecture about the importance of what that guy was doing down in this lowest hole in the ship. I got a lecture about the importance of working together on the ship and how on a ship when you're at sea, people tended to forget their nationality or their race or their religion, because while they were on the ship, they functioned as one unit. And it's not that racial tensions or divides did not exist, but for the time that they were on the ship at sea, they all knew that their survival depended on sort of letting go of what their actual identity was and accepting the identity of the ship. They were part of, as my uncle would say, this man's Navy. And so as an African-American lieutenant commander, he didn't think of himself as an African-American lieutenant commander. He was a lieutenant commander, and his expectation was that everyone else on the ship supported his rank. And they didn't look at him as a black man. They only looked at him as a lieutenant commander, and with that came certain expectations that he would make decisions for the good of the ship and put his own personal interests to the side. To remember that, because in the case of my uncle, who had several tours of duty at sea and saw lots of battles, the ability of the ship's crew to accept that identity allowed them to survive, simple and plain. If they had let their personal identities get in the way or racial tensions that existed back home or in the very neighborhoods they came from, it would have impacted their ability to successfully support the mission. So in business, when I talk about diversity and inclusion, and again, there's a lot of interest, the difference is most businesses, if not all, are not making life and death decisions. And I think that's what intrigued me about the Submarine Way, because in talking with John and Deb about the book, it resonated and brought up memories. There's some 35, almost 40 years old now, regarding what's different about being in the Navy or serving in an enclosed space that doesn't necessarily exist in the business world. They're not making life and death decisions. If they don't have the right people, if the population doesn't get along, you can quit and get off. As my uncle was fond of saying, you really can't get off of an aircraft carrier in the middle of the Indian Ocean. Well, you can get off, but there's nowhere to go for the most part. So that was what I learned from my uncle about the Navy. And again, my uncle served in the Navy from the point of desegregation that occurred and saw the impact. But, you know, he would be the first to tell you that when you're at battle at sea, there's only one identity, the Navy.
Yeah.
The transition, Carrie. Thank you so much for that. And for all of this interview and the transition for our listeners that really Deb found that there was actually a system on submarines that I transitioned from submarines to CBS television and have been in various forms of big and small corporate world ever since. And for our listeners, listen to Carrie's story. But don't dismiss the fact that, you know what, we're not on a carrier, we're not on a submarine, so it's not applicable. You can build that sense of mission to a certain extent because I have and others have. And if you can at least get close to that spirit, you go a long way to really embracing people's individuality and what they bring to the table. So you may not be in a life or death world, but if you listen to Carrie's story, and I encourage you to listen to it several times, this entire interview, but if you listen to that last part about his uncle and his experiences, I know that that can be duplicated, and that's why this book was written, because I have duplicated it. And it's not because I'm wonderful. It's that you can create a focus where it's about us and about getting something done, and it's not about you. So thank you so much, Carrie, for this whole interview. But that last part, you know, I'm a little biased. I'm allowed to have a favorite.
Thank you so much, Carrie. We know you have to get on with your day, but we really appreciate you taking the time. And your fan club will be really happy now.
Yes.
And let's stay in touch.
Well, indeed, it was a pleasure, and I welcome the opportunity to speak again. Have a great day.
Thank you, you too.
You too, Gary.
Oh, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us for The Submarine Way, and we hope you'll tune in to our next program coming out very soon.
Very soon. Every week we post. Sometimes it's just Deb and I, but mostly we love to have great guests like Carrie Mason today. Shout out to Carrie. And shout out to our listeners. Thanks so much for listening to The Submarine Way. We look forward to hearing, seeing, and speaking with you again.